man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Welcome to another episode of Who Shot Ya? It is episode 183. That is four episodes away from a Snoop Dogg reference. And as always, I'm in the booth with my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up, we have King of the
You can't even say it. It's such nonsense.
No. I'm vibing off of Peach Cobbler. You got chaotic energy today. You have King of the Critics, Christmas Zaddy himself, looking like a real snack on that corner in Zoom. It's Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what's good?
God, you know, now I'm feeling bad that I didn't make a Turk 182 reference last week, but that ship has clearly sailed now. A couple of good things, both sort of dealing with France, I guess. Dave made a cassoulet last week, which was incredible. If you've never had it, it's this incredibly rich, like, bean and eight different kinds of sausage and duck meat the creation that takes several days to make. And I think it's what gets you through the winter. It was just so great. And he put a lot of effort into it, and it was all worth it. And then the other thing is that I'm only just saying this to make Drea jealous, is that later today I'm going to be seeing the new Celine Sciamma film. Because it's premiering at the Berlin Film Festival.
I want it. I read that Celine Sciamma and then like time travel, like that there's an element of time travel.
I don't even know that, so don't tell me.
So I might have been lied to. People like to mess with me about her all the time.
Yes.
I'm very jealous.
It is not her Marvel movie, as it turns out. One day.
Well, that other voice you heard is none other than Queen of the Midwest, programmer extraordinaire, another snack in this Zoom meeting that we are recording this pod on. That is Drea Clark. What's good?
That actually reminds me that my brother took offense to me saying last week that he would tease me about you calling me Queen of the Midwest. He's like, I've heard him say that many times. I've never said anything about it. And I was like, fair enough. I did you and Dad wrong. Neither of them have mocked me for that. That what's good with me is kind of inspired by today's movie. But in general, the concept of friendship is very good with me right now. We are nearing the 1 year anniversary of all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And like last night I had my weekly Zoom with one group of friends. I have all these schedules set up where I've maintained connections and like loving relationships with so many friends through this. And there's people that I have like watched a movie with once a week who live in Texas and San Francisco and places I don't normally get to see. And I'm so grateful for that. My friend Kiva in Boston listens to our show every week while she's cooking, and then will just text me things that made her laugh from it or questions. Wow. And I'm telling you, Kiva has not seen 90% of the movies we discuss. So it's like even sweeter. So just the check-ins, the randomness, it's giving me like warm fuzzies thinking of all that. There's plenty that we've lost, but I feel very grateful for all of the sweet bubblies that I'm still getting from people that I care about and don't get to see or talk to enough, but it means even more when I do. So friendship.
Ooh, whoop. I love that.
Just a perfect blend. Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. And of course, we have a wonderful guest as well, an actress and writer who can be seen in such work as It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, The Grinder, and The Santa Clarita Diet. And so I don't break form and make it weird, also a snack in the Zoom, Mary Elizabeth Ellis. What's good?
Woo! I mean, being called a snack is always appreciated. Especially by a man enjoying cobbler at this very moment. So I know I'm in good company. Hi, I'm happy to be here. Thank you guys for asking me. And I would say I'm going to go professional with what's good with me. I got to shoot two films during this past year, despite quarantine. One of them was with Mr. Paul Thomas Anderson, which was pretty amazing.
So cool.
And one of them is by Zoe Lister-Jones and Daryl Wine, and their film, How It Ends, has been just killing it in the festival circuit. So I'm super, super proud of those guys and excited to be part of that. See what the little journey
is. Sundance premiere. I don't know if Alonzo have heard of this festival, but very fancy, and we love Zoe.
You are determined to be a drinking game, I think. Mm-hmm. Is that the deal? Iffy, what's good?
Oh, what's good with me? Well, as you know, my birthday was last Friday, and it is now March, but the Pisces season is upon us. You know, of the many things that I will talk about that I did on my birthday, you know, I did take a second. I don't know if anyone is in the LA area knows that in Malibu, Broad Street Oysters has a drive-through Oysters. If you like sucking down scallops like I do, you can drive through, pick up some oysters, some booze. You know, I'm just going to say the oysters, you know, I may or may not have grabbed booze and then had it on the beach in the Carbon, you know, that's that Carbon beach area that like that is a little more private, and, you know, had a little beach picnic and it was great. It was a real treat. I've been thinking about it all week. So
just in case the restaurant doesn't leave sand in your oysters, you want to like go to the beach and just up your chances.
Yeah. I like to make sure. I like that grunt grind, you know.
Just a little extra rinse in the ocean. Do you like to dip it?
Oh yeah.
Salty.
Yeah. But yeah, no, they have solid oysters. It really does, like, I have a theory that they're getting it from the beach because it's like hella fresh. I'm like, all right, y'all know what y'all doing. And the lobster rolls smack. So
I love a lobster roll.
Oh,
me
yeah.
Too.
Chilled, chilled or warmed? Warmed or chilled?
Ooh,
butter or mayo?
Butter. Either.
Yeah, I'm a butter. I'm a butter.
I will take what you serve me.
All right. Well, you know, speaking of going to the beach, having a good sunny day, today we're discussing Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. Ooh. And we'll answer a call from the Who Shot line. And of course, as always, we'll have our staff picks. But first, it's time for our new segment, It a Dick. Short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a news segment and answer the question, Is This Important? Do I Care? First up, we have the news of Ta-Nehisi Coates to write the new Superman movie. According to the publication Shadow and Act, writer Ta-Nehisi Coates is set to pen the new J.J. Abrams-produced Superman movie. Coates is probably best known for his 2015 book, Between the World and Me, which is an extended letter to his teenage son about growing up as a black man in America. But he has also been writing Black Panther comics at Marvel for the past several years, which embarrassingly is the only work of his that I have read. Coates had this to say: I look forward to meaningfully adding to the legacy of America's most iconic mythic hero. Is this important? Do you care?
Super important. And yes, I care. I think that we've been seeing a real, I mean, this isn't necessarily anything new. You had like the John Stewart Green Lantern back in the late 70s, 80s, you know, who was black. But in more recent years, you've had Kamala Khan and you know, I forget, the kid who becomes Blue Beetle in the DC comics, and Miles Morales. And, you know, there's been a lot greater sign of diversity, and not just sort of like, oh, we're going to create, you know, Black Lightning or Black, you know, Noun, but we're actually going to let them fill in the shoes of these kind of legacy characters, because the legacy characters have already been hopping from identity to identity anyway, so why should they always be white people? Superman, I think, is sort of the ultimate get in this regard, and, you know, why not? Who says that everybody on other planets is white and has a mid-Atlantic accent?
Yes.
Or humanoid shape. If you're going there anyway, yeah, go there. I'm super excited about this. I think that Ta-Nehisi Coates is such a unique talent, from being someone who's this kind of revered intellect when it comes to parsing race relations, both historically and culturally and personally, but then also has a deep, real love for comics culture and storytelling. And his Black Panther run was the first comic book series I've read in forever, because I was so excited about that. And the idea of imprinting or bringing that knowledge and putting it in comics form is exciting.
I think, you know, this superhero powered by the sun, of course melanin would help with that, you know, like that's just a 101. Superman should have always been black. That's you know, generates the most energy, but yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see. I mean, honestly, it's funny to see the fanboys get all mad about it anyway, and then they'll rush to hate watch it anyway, so it's always a good I'm like, make everyone black, make everyone a woman, do everything, because at the end of the day, all these mad fanboys are gonna watch it so they can dunk on it. And then and you'll still make the same amount of money. So do it all. Ruin their lives.
Yeah, I'm super excited for the discourse if and when a black Superman is cast.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just going to be nothing but thoughtful and respective, loving conversation. Yeah.
That's why I'm so excited to be reviewing the Snyder Cut next week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've all been waiting for that.
I do have a crazy old issue of Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane, where he puts her in a machine that makes her a black woman for 24 hours so she can go undercover in the projects of Metropolis.
Oh, my God. Oh, man.
It's a doozy.
I feel like that's a, like, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia episode that I read, and I'm like, you guys can't do this. I don't think you should do this.
And yet it works, yeah.
And yet it works.
Okay, speaking of something that may or may not work, I segued the hell out of that one, you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Deadline is reporting that The Greatest Showman director Michael Gracie is looking for a distribution deal to produce his biopic about pop star Robbie Williams called Better Man. But what makes this biopic a little different from others is that Williams will not be portrayed by a traditional actor, but rather a CGI monkey. For those who aren't familiar with Robbie Williams, he's a huge British pop star who started in the boy band Take That in the 90s and went on to become an even bigger solo act. Gracie is apparently looking for a production company willing to cough up around $100 million to produce the film. Also, I am looking for that if anyone has two of those bags of money. Is this important? Do you care? I'm starting only because I have to explain. So I went to school in England for a year and then visited all the time. And going back, I can't, like, to stress the enormity of Robbie Williams' success in the UK and, like, what his, how he's seen, I think that is something that in this pitch even would need to come across, like, internationally, how big Robbie Williams is. That, because for us it's like, why would I make him headless? Like, I don't know who that is anyway.
This is the one country on earth where I think you get a collective shrug about this.
Yeah,
it's like Kylie Minogue. She's gigantic everywhere on earth and she's like has a following in the US, but
someone he probably dated, like. Yeah, Robbie Williams is so huge, but also has, like, all
she's
of the...
She's too cool for Robbie Williams, please.
She's too cool for everyone. But, like, the idea of, you know, thinking of, like, this would be, like, Justin Timberlake, right? Like, oh, we're going to do a story specifically about Justin Timberlake, but he's going to be played by a CGI monkey. Like, the absurdity of it is even better if you understand his fame level.
But follow-up question, is everyone else around this character going to be played by CGI animals? What's the story here?
A great question.
I think the idea, this seems like a very George Michael-y, like, I was just a dancing monkey for these people. So I think he'll be the dancing monkey.
Metaphor.
And everybody else will be.
Metaphors.
Get it? You want to watch that for a feature film, don't you?
Okay, I do. You say this and I am all for stupid weirdness. And also Michael Gracie, I did not watch The Greatest Showman. I did watch the main woman doing the rehearsal of her song. Then it made me cry several times. And Hugh Jackman's crying in a rehearsal stage. It's great. I'm sure better than the movie. But he has a background in visual effects. So, like, this makes a little, I don't know. I think that there could be something in this. I don't know if it's $100 million budget worth of something. Because I could make a couple movies for that. But
this is not, like, unknown for Robbie Williams. Like, he did a video for a song called Rock DJ where he has, like, he's surrounded by adoring women. And he, like, takes off all of his clothes. And then he takes off all of his skin. And then he takes off all of of his organs until he's left just as a skeleton or whatever. So it's like,
great.
Yeah, we get it, hon.
I'm more interested in that. Bring the darkness.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Moving on, Dame Judi Dench opens up about her loss of eyesight at a recent online event benefiting the Vision Foundation. Dame Judi Dench opened up about her deteriorating eyesight and how she's able to keep acting through it. She said, quote, "I've had to find another way of learning lines and things, which is having great friends of mine repeat them to me over and over and over again," unquote. Dench suffers from macular degeneration, which means that her retina is deteriorating, obscuring her central vision. But in the conversation, Dench points out some of the positives that have come with her diagnosis. Quote, "But it does enable you to do one thing, and that is you just have to get very close to people before you can recognize who they are. During lockdown, I made a film, and I was up close addressing people wearing masks during rehearsals. Nothing to do with any scene I'm in. It's kind of exquisite if you can do that, and that's the good side of it. You have to look at that side of it. Is this important? Do you care?"
I want Dame Judi Dench up in my face.
Yeah,
I mean,
yes.
Just Big bring same. It Happily. Like closer, yeah. The better.
There's a few things in this that I find interesting. One is in the article itself, I was not disappointed, like, but on like her behalf in a defensive way, that there was a summation of something like her main concern was that nothing had to change for anyone else she was working with to accommodate what she was going through. And that bummed me out because I think it should be the opposite of that. And I think there needs to be so much more support and flexibility overall for anyone who's coming to set with any kind of disability to set things up to like for them to win rather than for them to feel apologetic or embarrassed or like they're slowing things up. Like people are bringing different things to the page, whether or not you can see it. Like there's plenty of actors with reading disabilities or, you know, other things that they're always trying to like work around. But there is beyond that, a really interesting philosophical idea of what it means to act and to be able to see the person that you are in a scene with. And like, you know, because once people get going there's an energy that's formed when people are in character and they're doing back and forths. And for the people that Judy is acting with, you can't see how well someone can see you. So for her, it's more the idea of like, well, what does that feel like for you, that disconnect of not having the same eye contact or the same, you know, significant sharing of in a moment? Like, how will that make her feel as a performer? And hopefully, like, will unlock some things rather than feel just like, ugh, what a setback.
I would imagine that, you know, given how much she's probably had to work on things like sense memory over the years, that it has only sort of attuned the other senses, you know, more so as she is losing one. But it's great that she is being open about it in the context of, and I'm still working. You know, this isn't like the, oh, I've, you know, taken to my bed and here's what's happening to me. It's like, no, I've been on the set. I've been doing this stuff and that. And people have to read the lines of me now because I can't read the text. But, you know, like I'm out here doing my thing. And so that's, I think, encouraging, not just for people who want to see more stuff with Judi Dench in it, but I think for actors in general who might feel like that certain limitations would spell the end of their career when it doesn't necessarily have to.
And she can do a more of a... Catherine O'Hara from Guffman, like when I talk to you, I close my eyes, and then when I look away, I open.
You know, I want to try that less is more kind of acting, where you just, when you're talking to someone, you close your eyes, and then you look at them when you're not talking to the person. I mean, you open your eyes when you're looking away, but then when you talk to the person, you go like that, and you open your eyes, and then you look back at the person, but you never open your eyes when you're talking to them.
If I ever acted in anything, that's exactly what I would do. That's the exact...
Sorry to joke. That's why I'm here.
We love a joke and we love a segue, which is why we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we'll be talking about Barb and Star Goes to Vista Del Mar.
Maximum Fun is a network by and for cool, popular people. But did you know it also has an offering designed to appeal to nerds?
A show for nerds? On Maximum Fun, the devil, you say?
It's true. It's called The Greatest Generation, and they review episodes of a television program for nerds called Star Trek. They've reviewed TNG, DS9, and are now reviewing Voyager.
Hey, Star Trek. My daughter enjoys that program.
Well, if she enjoys that and she enjoys humor of the flatulent variety, might I recommend she subscribe to The Greatest Generation?
Hey, are you calling my kid a nerd? Boy, I oughta.
Well, gotta go. Become a friend of DeSoto by subscribing to The Greatest Generation on MaximumFun.org today.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Mary Elizabeth Ellis,
Alonzo Duralde.
Today we're talking about Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. Alonzo, would you mind providing us with a brief, in all caps, like producer Casey types it, synopsis?
Sure. Oscar-nominated Bridesmaids co-writers Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumolo are Star and Barb, respectively. They work in a furniture store in the Midwest. One is a widow, one is a divorcee, and they're each other's besties and keep each other entertained completely all the time. But they decide that they need to shake things up in their life, so they go on a vacation to Vista Del Mar, Florida, which is an island paradise for people over the age of 40. And it's the annual seafood jam, and things are getting crazy, especially an attempt by a supervillain to destroy the town with some trained killer mosquitoes. Her henchman, played by Jamie Dornan, shows up to help make the plan happen, but then he falls in with Barb and Star, and who knows what's going to happen then.
Yeah, yeah. Now, this was a super fun movie, but, you know, we're going to kick this off with one of these questions that Casey likes to load up with us. So Drea, being the queen of the Midwest, how did you feel about the representation of the women from the Midwest?
Yeah, I've lived in the Midwest about as recently as Annie and Kristen, so that's fitting. I will say it is perfect on so many levels. Like, I full up was texting pictures to Mary Elizabeth of my mother basically wearing Barb and Star clothes, because their wardrobe, that hair, like the whole, all of that, their talking club. I was like, oh yeah, I know all of those people. I either went to high school with them or they're the mothers of the people I went to high school with. there's also just a, I don't know. It was a loving version of it. So it was also minus any like passive aggressiveness that also generally comes with that package of, oh, I'm just gonna say this thing here real nice. But this was just all sweetness forward. The hair and clothes though were so amazing, and they were summed up when the biggest compliment she could pay was, you could be a Chico's model. I mean it. Because that was the energy. So yes, the Midwestern, the vibe was there. The look of the houses that we saw, I mean, it's all ridiculous. This is such a heightened, absurdist comedy. So I don't know if you guys got that. Like,
oh,
yeah. I mean, what? It's real subtle.
I thought it was a documentary.
Yeah. The ridiculousness is real subtle. So you might have just been grabbing on to the authenticity of it. But yes, it was very, those hairstyles were perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, no, this was exactly my type of comedy. I think it was super fun. Also, you know, Vanessa Bayer, she cracks me up every time. And it's so funny because, like, the last time I saw her was in I Think You Should Leave, in one of the sketches. And, like, I was like, oh, she's so versatile, because in that one she's playing, like, this young woman. And this one she's, like, a middle-aged woman. I was like, you're funny every time, no matter what age you play. Good time. Lots of fun cameos.
It is packed to the gills.
Yeah,
it was, oh, yeah. Someone compared it, it might have even been Alonzo, to the Muppets, how they always did movies where, like, every single person you saw was like just a ringer. Like, they were just every time you turned the corner. Yeah. But it was
like
also
Rose Abdu and Fortune Feimster in the Talking Club. Just,
yes!
Like, you know,
Damon Wayans Jr.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh my God.
Oh,
his,
yeah.
Like,
so great.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. It's definitely it's like, hey, look. I would love you to come in and be the Deus Ex Machina of this movie. You play a mermaid that it was lightly referenced in a transition scene early in the movie, but it's all going to come together. Does that sound good? And she's like, yes.
She's fancy, baby. She's,
yeah,
fancy.
Fancy. Please, everyone go Google Reba McEntire fancy. Watch it.
Don't let me down.
I used to watch her sitcom religiously, actually. Like, I was a big fan of the Reba show.
I like that for you.
Yeah,
it is now in the Hallmark really Channel rotation with Golden Girls reruns, like Reba, nice. Reba, Reba for hours.
Oh, actually, the Reba of it, or the Trish of it, really is a great point of something else that very much worked for me with this is comedy of this sort is difficult because it's heavily written. There's clearly improv going on, but the structure is so built in and so strong. So you get this throwaway scene early on of these two women just nattering about a fictional Trish. And they're just like listing characteristics of this. And it's, you're like, okay, I get the scene. Like, it's one of those, if you were editing it, you're like, well, do we really get anything from them other than learning they're on the same page? We already know that. Like, it's all funny what they're saying, but it seems like it's going nowhere. And yet,
you get a payoff.
You know, an hour later, it pays off in this way that you've completely forgotten about it. And so when it happens, it's so satisfying. Like, it's just indicative of writing on a level that respects what this kind of movie is beyond just, let's just do a series of funny scenes or bits. You know, it has a shape to it.
I'm so glad you said that because, like, you know, this movie's gotten compared to MacGruber, which Kristen Wiig is also in, which I like a lot. But also a lot of people have summoned, and I've been hearing people defend this movie for years, Popstar.
Oh, and my it's God. Like, it's, yes, that's great.
But here's the thing. Popstar is a mess. Popstar is like these funny scenes that barely hold together and ideas that don't go anywhere. And I think it's the kind of movie that, like, if you're stoned at 2 o'clock in the morning, it's the funniest thing you ever saw. And you will remember it as being funny because there are bits of it that are funny. But I think as a movie, it doesn't hold together. Whereas this film, yeah, there are improvisational bits to it, but there's also a structure. And I think really great comedies give you that structure of setup and payoff. And, you know, so many of the films that I think are like the classics and even like my favorite comedies of recent years feel written, and that's not a bad thing, and it's not like the death of comedy. If anything, it's the platform of comedy. So, like, look, I love Hot Rod, but I don't like Popstar. You're never going to convince me. Like, you look at the trailer of like the people that are in this movie that then got completely cut out of it, which is like, again, you have Muppets casting, but they'd have nothing to do. And you're like, oh, because you had something to do, but then they couldn't figure out how to make it fit later, so they chopped it out. So anyway, I love that about this movie. And I also love the fact that in the first 10 minutes, I thought, are they punching down? Are they just like kind of mocking these women? But it becomes so clear that A, they love them, and B, this movie is operating on such an absurdist plane that it's not set on Earth, you know, that it stopped bothering me. And I just kind of went with it. And by the end of it, I was completely on board.
It was almost like being in a conversation with friends that you have inside jokes with from like 20 years ago. And you know that they have that. And you see, so did Annie write on SNL? I know that, I don't think she did, but
I don't think so. Yeah.
You can see, like, I feel they've been best friends for so long. You can see the influences of so many of Kristen's characters in the relationship that they have. So it does feel like both getting to watch these inside jokes and also being with them.
I can imagine them like waiting for a table and just like lapsing into these characters.
Yeah.
Yes. You know,
like, we have 10 minutes. Let's just do something. You
it
know?
Would not and, surprise
and,
me.
And much
to
of it we'll never
out.
See and was garbage, but that's like where Trish was born, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, on a personal note, my roommate in college was named Stephanie. And when she got like very drunk or upset, she turned into Trish, like, but a different Trish. We called her Bad Mood Trish. So when they went into the whole Trish thing, I was like, oh my God, oh my God. This is amazing. It really is an inside joke with friends. So
that's
for me.
That's totally the thing. Yeah.
Yeah,
but
such
that
a
conversation.
Payoff.
Yeah, it was, I think the other thing, and I like that Alonzo brought up wondering where the tone was going to land, because the first, well, I'll say the cold open of it with the little kid singing the Barbra Streisand. I was like, where did they find this perfect human child?
Yes.
How do I go live in this moment? He had the most amazing, I mean, they must have died over his performance because it was so incredible. Like, they cut the sound at one point so he could be like, and we got nothing to be guilty. Like, he was so good. But then, so I was like, okay, I'm working in a weird sphere. It's weird, I know, but is it going to be like weird that still punches at people? And then the second you realize, oh, I'm about to spend 90 minutes with the complete absence of mean-spiritedness. And I say that when there is a woman, a villain who kills someone and is trying to kill many more people, and there is still an absence of malice. And having that, having every single joke in this is never at the expense of anyone. There's a whole recurring bit of the, there's this man in this like yellow Speedo who's always got like a drink in his hand and is like leering at them with a wink. They're never mocking that guy. That guy is so comfortable in his own skin. He's just like,
he's living his life.
Right. He's like, looking good, ladies. And they're like, thank you, guy in Speedo. Do you know what I mean? There's no setup. There's no like, oh, this was all great. And then a pocket of body shaming or, oh, this was, I mean, this movie becomes strangely sex positive because, yeah. you know, there's all of this like goodwill that keeps coming up in different unexpected ways.
Can we talk about Jamie Dornan?
I cannot believe we haven't yet.
I like that is such a tricky needle to thread because like you could see where they would have cast a traditional comedy guy in that role and he would have either like put the whole thing in quotes or kind of stood outside of it or kind of winked at the audience to let you know that he's on the joke. Jamie Dornan commits to the bit and it is hysterically funny and he's like has gotten to be like I think he's funny in Wild Mountain Time, which is a bananas movie, but it's still entertaining. But like in this one he does it so straightforward and allows himself to be the sex object of this movie, you know, like the whole point is that like, you know, this is the role that like the bikini clad girl would play in a dude comedy. He is like the hunky guy who shows up and like, you know, drives the female leads wild and is there and is besotten by them, you know, and he sings
and dances.
And with seagulls.
And pines after Kristen Wiig's other character, the evil character. And
yes.
That's fun. Which,
yeah. I also like to jump off that mean-spiritedness. There was that fun moment where like she sees that he's been like, you know, in love with these two women and she goes, she is beautiful.
You mean that the Kristen Wiig says that about her other Kristen Wiig character?
Exactly. Yeah.
Did any of you, when they introduced Kristen Wiig, the villain, because she has like a more extreme makeup and she has this, a tooth thing, whatever it is. It took me a split second because I was like, I recognize her. Is that Tilda Swinton?
Yeah,
like,
they were going to cast Tilda Swinton.
Drea, it took me till right now at this moment when those words came out of your mouth.
No.
Yeah, I was
iffy.
That's amazing.
Oh my God.
The power of wig.
Wow.
The power of wig and a wig.
I'm excited that we are watching you experience this.
I got it right away. But I did find out later that it was supposed to be Tilda Swinton, and then she couldn't do it. And so that's when Kristen Wiig played the role. But it's perfect because, you know, Tilda Swinton famously plays like two or three roles in Suspiria. So, you know, the baton is being passed. And what I also love a comedy where they have clearly decided that there were no studio notes that told them that they needed to like aim for the middle. This is a movie that some people are not going to find funny at all. And then other people are going to dress as these characters for Halloween for the rest of their lives. And it's great. Like, it's great that they didn't feel like they had to meet that middle ground where everybody finds something a little amusing and then other parts it didn't work. This movie is 100% what it wants to be. It represents a vision. And like it or not, give me all of those kind of movies as opposed to these sort of committee built, you know, camels that don't deliver because they're trying so hard to meet this bottom line or assuage this imaginary audience. And this is a film that's like, we think this is funny. This makes us laugh. We think it'll make you laugh as well.
100% agree with that. I did just revisit Zoolander and I would say that there's some similarities. The first Zoolander.
Do not watch Zoolander 2.
I won't.
Don't do it.
I haven't and I won't.
I beg you. Kristen Wiig is also in it. Do not watch
it. Yes, I shan't.
That's a good, I don't even know what the name of this genre would be, of the like absurdist, because it's not
You know what it felt? It felt to me like the kind of movies that they used to make based on cable comedy sketch shows. Mm-hmm. You know, like the Kids in the Hall movie or the Mr. Show movie. Exactly, but without a show to be coming from. But it's that same level of like heightened reality and sort of oddball surrealism. And that's what I felt like I was watching when I was watching it.
Yeah, I typically call this genre Carl Tart's pitches to every white woman idea. That's some inside baseball. But this is like Carl's comedy. Like every time we'll have like a show and he'll be like, we'll be grounded. And he's like, but what if we became astronauts and then we flew? It's like, all right, cool. Even though I do like that too. But, this is good stuff. I guess it's time for our final review. We've been talking about it. It's been fun. Casey's been messaging us to wrap it up. He's been doing the wavy finger motion in a circle. He's held up the machete.
That, we call that the dumb cheetle.
He put on the long
now.
White beard.
Yeah. He put the he showed up our headshots, all three of us next to each other, sliced it. Now it's time. So the way we rate movies here are the best being snap it up on physical media, next best being stream it, and then skip it. So, as our guest, Mary Elizabeth, we'll let you do the honors. Would you snap it up on physical media, stream it, or skip it?
I really, really loved it. And I think I would... What was the middle one? Not snapping it.
Stream it.
I think I would stream it. I did stream it, right? I got it on Amazon and I really enjoyed that. And I made some popcorn and I let my 9-year-old watch the last like 15 minutes. Don't judge me.
There are a lot of good lessons in those last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
What about you, Drea?
Well, obviously, I'm a snap it up on physical media. And I look at it not just like would I do it for myself, but my recommendations for other people. But it would, like Alonzo said, need to be people who maybe shared my sense of humor, because this is very much a flavor. You are going to be like, yes, drown me in this flavor, or I do not understand what you like about this flavor. And for me, I am a drown me in this flavor. I responded so well to the humor of it. I'm looking forward to the time when I'm sitting with people and our entire conversation is just us quoting it back and forth at each other, where you're like, remember when they said, and then remember when they, and also Jamie Dornan I will never understand how they cast him, how they came to that. And it was the best decision in the world. I adored this. It made me so happy and I'm going to watch it more than pretty much any movie I watched all of last year.
Yeah, I'm a snap it up for sure. I want to see the deleted scenes. I want to hear the writers and director commentary. I want all of it. All of it.
Yeah. No, I felt the same way after reading Alonzo's review. And by reading Alonzo's review, I mean reading his Facebook post about his review, where he said, if this is your flavor, you'll love it. It is indeed my flavor. This definitely feels like one of those, I guess we'll call them adult parties, where you throw on a movie and people are just like casually like, what? No, it's not a horny thing, Drea. Drea made a face. You know,
adult parties.
Yeah, you know how like it's not like a rager, but it's like everyone's kind of chilling and drinking and sitting around. I feel like this is one of those party movies where people will enjoy it while we sip on some wine.
And this will be the party that I get kicked off out of, because I'm like, stop talking over the movie. You guys, you're missing so many good lines.
Yeah, you're like when I decided to watch Rocky Horror Picture Show for the first time at a Rocky Horror Picture Show midnight screening. And I was like, I don't know what's going on. Why are they throwing tortillas? I'm trying to watch this movie.
And this is why I've still never seen The Big Lebowski.
That's been our review. And we'll be right back after we hear from another show for Maximum Fun. See you in a bit.
Video games.
Video games.
Video games. You like them?
Maybe you wish you had more time for them?
Maybe you want to know the best ones to play?
Maybe you want to know what happens to Mario when he dies?
In that case, you should check out Triple Click. It's a podcast about video games.
A podcast about video games? But I don't have time for that.
Sure you do. Once a week, kick back as three video game experts give you everything from critical takes on the hottest new releases,
to scoops, interviews, and explanations about how video games work,
to fascinating and sometimes weird stories about the games we love.
Triple Click is hosted by me, Kirk Hamilton.
Me, Jason Schreier.
And me, Maddie Myers.
You can find Triple Click wherever you get your podcasts and listen at MaximumFun.org.
Bye.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duraldi,
Mary Elizabeth Ellis,
Drea Clark.
And today we have an email from a listener named Betty. I'll read it. Hey, Ify, Alonzo, and Drea. I've been watching movies with black romances this month. Examples: The Photograph, Sylvie's Love, and Paris Blue. Classic. Etc. I love a good soundtrack. Want to know y'all's favorites. Stop me if you've asked this before. Keep being the best, Betty. All right. Yeah, there's only one way to read The Photograph, and it's like the lead singer of Nickelback. I'm gonna kick off. Also, shout out to Casey extending, you know, Black History Month. He said it's Black History Year. We're not gonna relegate this question to February. We're gonna kick it off in March. And I'm gonna go, you know, as it's not like the fluffiest love story, but I mean, since we're bringing soundtrack into it, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Moonlight, which soundtrack I still listen to this day. And then Barry went and did the Chopped and Screwed version, which if you're unaware of Chopped and Screwed, it's like kind of chopped up and slowed down. It's a Southern thing. It's great. So that's I'm gonna kick it off with that. And I'm sure it'll be happier from here on out.
No, Moonlight does have, there is a moment in that of poignant love in the end, mm-hmm. of like, between him, Trevante Rhodes and Andre Holland, that's like the most romantic swelling. Like, I get that, like the heart yearning moment. I, thinking of the soundtrack side of it, Brown Sugar is one of my all time favorite movie soundtracks. Ooh. It's Taye Diggs and Sanaa Lathan. And it is like, to me, it's the perfect sort of rom-com shape that has the like, you know, oh, these people at odds for whatever reason. And then, but music's part of the through line of that. So I know she was just doing a small nod to soundtracks, but I like that that's stuck in my head. And I was like, oh, that's part of our cue. I'm going to answer that way. But I love Brown Sugar. Like, I should probably rewatch that again soon.
A great black romance about a musician is Beyond the Lights, the Gina Prince Bythewood film, starring Gugu Mbatha-Raw as a singer. Ooh. Who
that
falls
was my
for
staff
her
pick
bodyguard?
Last week. I love, hey, that movie.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. Yeah. So that's a great one. Mm-hmm. And then I was also thinking about, it's very exciting because this gives me a perfect excuse to promote the fact that this month on Criterion Channel, they are presenting several films by the great Rodney Evans, who is one of my favorite currently working queer black indie filmmakers, including his 2004 film Brother to Brother, which is about the Harlem Renaissance. Anthony Mackie, in one of his first roles, plays a contemporary art student who begins researching, and there's these great flashbacks where you see like Langston Hughes and Zora Neale Hurston, and it is a gorgeous black love story, and it's you know, been unavailable for a long time, so now people can see it, and I recommend that you do.
Very exciting. I'm writing names down. I'm excited to get into this. Yeah. Do you guys only talk about movies? Do you talk about TV? Or TV, ooh, is TV touchable? Or are we only going films?
TV is dead, yeah, to us.
No. You could touch on TV.
Hearts and minds are open.
Of course. Yes.
I'm going to then say that I May Destroy You was, ooh, one of my favorite things that I've ever seen in my life. And I think that it's a really beautiful love story. Am I going to cry? Maybe. about a woman falling in love with herself again and getting past trauma to be able to see herself for who she is again. And I really, really loved it. The soundtrack, I don't know. I can't speak to that. One of my favorite songs is the love theme from Spartacus. Yes. And I put it on almost every mix that I make. So, you know, revisit that. You guys write that down and get into that.
I clearly need to.
It's by Yusuf Lateef. And that also makes a great, like, Spotify list. So... Mm.
Yeah, that was amazing. Really kept us on our toes for that. That's how you do a dismount. Yeah.
I was thinking about Black queer love stories in film, and a couple that I came up with they're both sort of in the teen coming of age category, and there are some, you know, there are some darker, traumatic, dramatic stuff going on, but I think at their core, they are both, you know, they really strong love stories. A film called Naz and Malik about two Muslim black teenagers in New York who are kind of secretly in a relationship, but then run into trouble with the NSA. And then, of course, Dee Reese's extraordinary feature debut, Pariah, which is about a young woman kind of coming into her own and having her first relationship while dealing with her very religious and intolerant mother.
Mm. I have two festival choices that strangely both have a political like side to them, but that's not the thrust of the story. They're both love stories. One is called A Boy, A Girl, A Dream. It's Amari Hardwick and Megan Good, and it takes place all the night of the 2016 presidential election in LA, and she's visiting from the Midwest, and they meet, so it's a lot of, it's got that sort of before sunrise, two people walking, talking, meeting, connecting through the evening, but like with this really interesting politically charged backdrop. And then the other is Southside With You.
I was going to say.
Yep. With Parker Sawyers and Tika Sumpter. And it is, they play a young fictionalized Barack Robinson? Obama and Michelle, whatever. Robinson?
What? I think it was Robinson. Maybe I'm forgetting.
The disrespect
but
for me.
On their, anyway. On their first date. Oh, I love that movie.
Yes. Yeah. It's so wonderful and lovely because you're projecting so much of your like Michelle and Barack thoughts on them. But it's also just a really nice story, even if that's nothing you're bringing to the table. Like they're just good little, I love a love story.
Oh yeah. If I'm talking about black love stories and classics and soundtracks, then you know I'm gonna have to bring up you know, the movie that made me think that Maxwell made a Kate Bush song, and that's Love and Basketball.
Yeah.
With that.
It's work.
And I was like, I was so sure that was a Maxwell track. Did not know. He snatched it, just like Whitney Houston snatching My Heart Will Always Go On. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I will always love you.
Yeah, I will always love you. You just tried to make her a Celine Dion thief, and yes, she will not have it.
No.
I will. Yeah. I'll have that. I'd like it.
That is a cover we were deprived of, sadly.
Yeah, oh, man. I agree.
Well, thank you to everyone who has submitted a question like Betty. You can email us at whoshotya@maximumfun.org or call the Who Shot line, whose number is WSY 803-1664. I'd say email's a good alternative if you don't want us to hear your voice. Now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Drea, why don't you start?
All right. So mine is not really related to Barb and Star of it, but in terms of I just watched this and had such a pleasant, like, oh, how nice. And I do love a rom-com, and this is a sort of thoughtful teen one. It's called The Map of Tiny Perfect Things, currently on Amazon Prime. It is essentially a teen version of Groundhog Day or Palm Springs. It's actually closer to Palm Springs because it has the awareness of this as an existing
it's happening
genre.
More than one,
like,
person.
Yeah, it's also happening to more than one person. So yeah, more Palm Springs in that way. But it has it references Groundhog Day and The Edge of Tomorrow and things like that. But I found it just really easy to watch, had some nice sentiments, had some wonderful moments. So yes, if any of those things sound in keeping with our flavor conversation, if those sound delicious or even like, yeah, palatable, then this is the movie for you for this week right now.
I saw a new movie that I think is a perfect pairing with Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, and that is the SpongeBob movie Sponge on the Run, which is now screening on Paramount Plus or available for rental at Amazon and other places. I'm not a giant SpongeBob fan in that I don't watch it on TV on any regular basis, but this is the third movie now, and I think all three of the movies are just charming and delightful and really, really funny. Like, I laughed consistently through this film, and there is a road trip. SpongeBob and Patrick have to go to the lost city of Atlantic City to get a SpongeBob snail back, and it is this big, garish sort of, you know, Atlantic City under the sea, and just the way that they kind of go nuts in this sort of like crazy, you know, whirligig of things, but still it's their friendship that gets them through it all. I kept getting Barb and Star vibes from it. So I don't know if that was your flavor, this might be as well. I thought it was a delight. The new SpongeBob movie is now out.
I like that as a pairing. I've never seen any of the SpongeBob movies, mostly because I got in an argument with a friend of mine, Saucy, who called me a Patrick at one point, and I was like, never again. What?
How I got a Patrick?
What? Anyway,
you're
that's
a
awesome.
Sandy Cheeks.
Do I do staff picks? Do I do staff picks?
You're staff, lady.
I'll let you tie it all back together.
Oh,
at
that's
the end
typically how I like to do it.
With my
let everyone do their good ones.
All right.
Oh, no.
Oh, Iffy's always on point, not to worry.
Yeah. You can't out-random Iffy. Yeah.
Well, I think for a good pairing with Barb and Star, I would say Some Kind of Heaven. Did you guys see this documentary? It's a documentary about a retirement. I can't say home. It's like, yeah, giant community in Florida. And I loved it. I mean, look, everyone's going to die. And that's definitely part of what this is. And I think part of it is like, as we start looking toward that, what do we want for ourselves and our relationships and our legacies and what we leave in this world. And I loved it also. And I'm going to do one more, and this is not surprising, but I really needed to cry yesterday. And so I watched Nomadland, and it is such a beautiful partner to cry with. It just was also so beautiful about love and loss and what a human life is. And I loved it.
Nomadland was the movie we discussed last week, and I did not get to speak nearly enough about how much I cried with it because there's also so much about like isolation and things that hit now in a way. The movie that Mary Elizabeth picked, I'd like to point out, was at the 2020 Sundance Film Festival.
Of course you would.
But I haven't seen it, so I'm excited about your recommendation. Yeah.
Is it like Darren Aronofsky or somebody?
He produced it, but it's a new director, right?
Lance Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
Lance Oppenheim, something, yeah.
And I heard him talking about it on NPR, and I was like, oh, this sounds awesome. And I loved it. My mom watched it and she was like, that was sad. You know what I mean, though? Because of like, yeah, different times in life.
Why are you showing me this?
Maybe you have some things you need to get together. Maybe you need to start doing acid all the time, mom. I don't know.
Oh, man. Oh my gosh, Iffy.
Bring it home.
All right, I'm bringing it home with a movie that was mentioned earlier that I felt was of the same vibe. And I did enjoy it. It is Pop Star. Never Stop Stopping. It is funny.
Never Stop Never Stopping.
Never Stop Never Stopping. It you know, it's delicious. It's delicious. I enjoyed it. And I think you would too. You know, it may be all over the place, but in the best way. And you get the same thing. You get to see some Chris Redd doing his best Tyler, the Creator. You know, especially if you're like a music head. Lots of treats for everyone in there.
It does have my favorite joke about the time that U2 forced us all to download their new album in iTunes.
Yeah, that was wild. Like, I don't know who approved that and thought no one was going to be mad at it. Like, they're like, yeah, no one's going to be mad.
Bono.
Yeah.
Bono approved that. Yeah.
So it'll be okay. To the world.
It was rude. It was very rude.
Yeah. Oh. All right. Well, now it's time for five-star reviews. If you didn't know, if you leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it on air. And this one comes from MXSandy12. These guys are movie ninjas, and I've adored every moment I've listened to. They give you the full spectrum of the cultural landscape as well as informed movie opinions. And the banter is fantastic. It feels like I'm there with them. A must listen. Well, thank you, MX Sandy. That's all we do to make you feel like you're sitting right next to us. And just to fill that out, just know I'm stanky right now. I worked out and I haven't taken a shower yet. I'm real stanky. So make sure that's in your brain.
Make it all the way through the Zoom.
I love a good cobbler. Workout straight into cobbler. You're my hero. No, like that's my move.
Yeah. You know, you gotta burn the calories and fill it right back up.
Know where you're going after. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Nature abhors a vacuum.
That's so true.
Well, Mary Elizabeth, thank you for joining us. Anything you'd like to plug before we get up out of here?
I guess I kind of mentioned at the beginning, but look out for How It Ends by Zoe Lister-Jones and Daryl Wine. And also my good friend Rhea Perlman is in a movie that's doing festivals right now called Marvelous and the Black Hole. And I mean, can anyone ever get enough Rhea Perlman? No, is the answer. She's a magical lady.
No is the answer. And I love that you were like, oh, I'll plug myself and someone else.
And my very darling friend.
That is the kind of warm heart you have.
We don't get enough of her.
All right. Yes. And Drea and Alonzo, thank you again for another wonderful show. Any last words, anything you'd like to mention?
If anybody's craving Christmas content from me throughout the year, I am now doing a weekly appearance on the Deck the Hallmark podcast, talking about non-Hallmark made-for-TV Christmas movies, and those drop every Monday, and you can hear them on YouTube on the Bramble Jam Network.
Nice. I'm in deep prep on another Screen Drafts episode in which we are drafting Minnesota movies. That's movies both made in or featuring Minnesota. So if anyone has movies they think I might miss, please
Mystery Science Theater 3000, the movie?
Girl, you know that's on my list. Yes.
And I know you're feeling Minnesota.
Oh, obviously, number one with a bullet is feeling Minnesota. For sure. Yeah. No, there's a lot of duds in the mix, too. But anyway, Minnesota.
Oh, God,
movies,
you got to watch Graffiti Bridge, don't you?
Send them my way. Oh, sweet Lord. There's some duds.
Oh, all right. Well, if you'd like to support the show, please visit MaximumFun.org/join. If you'd like to purchase a Jumbotron, go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message or $200 for a promotional one. Again, the number for the Who Shot line is WSY-803-1664. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot Your Pod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/Who Shot Your Podcast, or send us an email at whoshotcha@maximumfun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.